I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. 50 years ago today, millions of Americans were trying to figure out what had happened the night before on The Ed Sullivan Show. The Beatles performed on the live CBS Sunday Night Variety program as teenage girls and young women in the audience screamed. The rest is pop music history, of course. We'll look back on the Beatles' debut and the British invasion in the second hour of Midday. Up front, David Craig, the Harford County executive. He's running for governor of Maryland and seeks his party's nomination in the June primary. We'll hear why he's running and what he thinks about the Maryland economy, education, social services, and criminal justice. Another in our series of candidates' interviews on Midday after the news. Good afternoon once again, and welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks with you here on WYPR, Monday through Friday, noon to 2, WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO the Eastern Shore and Ocean City, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. As always, we thank you for making Midday part of your day. Maryland's 2014 gubernatorial primaries are just 4 months away. In the run-up to this year's primary, June 24th, we have been hosting a series of conversations with candidates from both sides, Democrats and Republicans. These shows allow our listeners a chance to get to know the candidates a little bit better, hear about their records, and also ask some questions. So we welcome that today with our guest in this hour of the show, Harford County Executive David Craig, who's serving his second term as Harford County Executive, is with us in Studio A. Nice to have you with us, David Craig. David Craig, of course, a Republican candidate for governor. He's been Harford County executive since 2005. You're welcome to phone in with questions for the candidate as we move along through this hour of the show. I'll give the phone numbers. It's 410-662-8780. You're welcome to send in a question by email, too, midday@wypr.org. David Craig, a little bit of background, just a little brief bio here. I first met you when you were mayor of Havre de Grace,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was back in the 90s.
Oh, I was actually mayor in the 80s and then mayor in 2001.
Was that when it was? Okay.
Yeah, it was early 2000s. I had been mayor, and then I went to the House of Well, actually, I didn't run for office for a year and a half. I wanted to finish my master's degree, get that all done.
In education?
Actually, in history.
Before that, you had been an educator and administrator in schools, right?
Yes, I still was at that time. That was a part. Mayor was a part. I always tell people it was a 24-hour day part-time job. So I was still a teacher and assistant principal during all that time.
When you were mayor?
When I was mayor.
Wow.
Yes. So it was a long day.
And you've been county executive, I said, since 2005. Now,
so two and a half terms.
So it's 2.5 terms, really.
Yes.
And can you run again if you wanted to?
No. And I do believe in term limits on executives and things like that.
Okay.
And it's sort of biblical. After 7 years, it's time for you to move on and do something different. But I'm in my ninth year right now because my predecessor, Jim Harkins, had been selected by Governor Ehrlich to be a cabinet-level person. I was the mayor at the time, and the way it works in Harford County is similar to what happened in Anne Arundel County. Someone's gone, and then the council picks someone. So I put my name in and got selected by them.
And now for the next step, why do you want to be governor?
Well, I have this executive experience, and I tell people why. When I first ran for office back in 1979 as a Havre de Grace city councilman, I wanted to make sure Havre de Grace was a good place. And I told everybody I had three reasons to run, Randy, Courtney, and PJ, our son and daughters. And I wanted to make it a good place for them to grow up and live and, you know, get a job and all those types of things. And we actually were successful because not only did I win the race, but all three of them, as they grew up, he went in the Navy, they went to college, they all moved back. So they all live 10 blocks from where we are. All 8 grandchildren live there. If I have a really bad day, I just go by and get worshiped by Joey or somebody like that. So it turns things around. But I also tell people why I got involved. And a lot of it had to do with my father and his leadership and about how you should be involved in service. And it also goes back to Havre de Grace High School. If you've ever driven by it, you see at the top the motto says, enter to learn, leave to serve, which is interesting because the church I belong to, our motto had always been enter to worship, leave to serve. Well, it turned out I did a lecture one time. It was the same man. He is the assistant principal of the high school, and he was the choral director at our church, and he put that out, and it was always about service. So I enjoy that. It is a job if you ask for it. You can't complain about it. But I have executive experience. So being a mayor, county executive, I lean more toward executive rather than legislative side.
Well, what's pushing you to run this particular year, 2014? What would you say it is? Of all the issues that are out there facing Maryland, which one gets you into the race?
We need to make Maryland successful, continue to make it successful, and have the economy turn around. And it's very frustrating when I walk and see people, whether I'm campaigning or whether I'm the county executive or whether I'm just out, you know, buying the groceries. It seems like every day I talk to somebody that says, we're leaving the state. You know, eventually I'm retiring, I'm going to move to North Carolina or Florida or someplace
like
that.
I've always heard people say that. Yeah, people go to retirement communities.
Yeah, and they're leaving, and then they talk about the taxes.
Is that because of life here?
They mainly talk about the tax issues and, you know, their pensions when it comes to the estate tax that they're talking about now.
Oh, millionaires.
Well, you know, if you have a small business or a farm, you may be considered a millionaire, but I'm not sure you're a millionaire.
Well, in order to qualify for the exemptions under the estate tax, you need to have quite a bit of assets. So I understand there's a movement in the legislature this year to raise the exemption on the estate tax.
Yes.
But so you hear from people complain about taxes and they're retiring and moving elsewhere.
Yeah, that's one aspect. Or the fact that their children may be growing up and they're getting ready to go to college and they're leaving because they can't find the type of job they want. Because even though we hear the current administration talk about how jobs have come back, it's not the jobs that disappeared. It's a different level of jobs, and we want that back. And we need to turn that around.
How so? So we'll start with the economy, I guess, and job creation. Is that where you want to start?
That would be, first, I do tell people, when you're the executive, it's usually about the budget. And it's about how you balance your budget, which I've done now my 19th time. I'm getting ready to do that this year. And it's a real balanced budget. And so taking as little money out of people, spending it wisely, spending it transparently, and doing the services that people actually need, that's the one thing. Because if you have a vision for what you want to do when you're the governor, mayor, county executive, you're spending money to get that vision done. I believe that we have a very good economic development department, and when I go down to see the director, he's not there because he's out working. They're all out working. And we're not the ones that create the jobs. It's private businesses that create the good jobs. We have a very strong, diverse economy in Harford County with a lot of manufacturers, a lot of warehousers, a lot of small businesses. And we've actually seen job growth in Harford County since the economy tanked in 2008. We have 8,000 more jobs there. I didn't create them. We just sort of helped owners and people like that
Base realignment played a part in that.
That played a good part in some of the government jobs that came in. But of those 8,000 jobs, 6,000 are private sector jobs. So that's a good aspect of it.
So what would you do in Maryland? And how do you think Maryland's doing, generally, speaking about the economy? Unemployment has finally started to drop.
It's getting better, but it's not. I do believe, too, that we're sort of ignoring the city of Baltimore. We need to do a lot more for Baltimore to help it come back, because Baltimore was the heart of the economy for this state for the first 200 years. And it's declined substantially. And we have this opportunity with what's happening at the Panama Canal, but we need to get manufacturing businesses back here. And we could make, we talk about the Silicon Valley. We could make this a Silicon Bay. But the key is not just for someone to create a type of app they're going to make or things like that. You also want them manufactured here. And that's the best aspect. And that is one of the things we see with many of our defense contractors that are in Harford County, that they've invented certain things that eventually citizens will be able to use. You know, that GPS system in your car, those types of things. They will be able to do that. But we want them manufactured here so that that's better.
How would you contrast yourself with the governor who's leaving office, Martin O'Malley? And it gets to the question, what makes you a Republican? But how would you contrast yourself? I mean, people listening to this saying, okay, O'Malley's governor, I think I know what he's about. I voted for him. I may not have voted for him, but I get the lay of the land, what O'Malley's been like. He's been in office 8 years. So what would be the biggest difference? And it gets to that question, what makes you a Republican?
One of the things I think that he and I do talk about every once in a while, because I was president of MACO and we'd be sitting at the same table like you and I are today. When the current administration says, I mean, we've cut but the budget's $9 billion bigger. You haven't actually made a cut. That's not doing the math. You did the addition. You didn't do the
it's
subtraction.
It's $9 billion bigger than,
yeah, than
when
it was
he
when
took
he started.
A, right.
Yes. Okay. So 9.3. So you didn't actually make cuts. Maybe you cut the increases, but you didn't cut the whole thing. And you could have done that and not had a structural deficit that is going to be left in there for the next person, mm-hmm. whether it's me or you know, one of the other Republicans or one of the Democrats. When they get in there, they're going to go, "Oh my, I didn't. What do we do?"
And I, but so the, you just take a hard line on deficits, structural deficits.
Yes, you don't want to leave. You don't want to kick the can down the road. You don't want to set us up like a Detroit, where there are certain saying it is easy when you're in elected office to say, you know, I could not do this, and the next guy's got to worry about it. I had situations like that as county executive. I could just said, "Oh, we don't have to worry about our waste energy facility. It doesn't close until 2016." But we worked very hard for 8 years to come up with our agreement with Baltimore County, finally. We were working with the military first because it was on Aberdeen Proving Ground. That wasn't going anywhere. And we finally got it resolved. I could have just left that in 2016. Next guy would have gone, "Oh, my God."
Mm-hmm.
We had that really huge issue with the budget, with the pension right now, where 3 years ago the current administration said, you know, we're going to shift the teacher pension and library pensions to the local government, and they're going to have to pay $360 million. But I'm going to put, this is what they said, we're going to put $300 million in there. And then the next year they only put $200, and then this year they only put $100. That means they're still kicking that can down the road.
Or they're weaning the counties off the state's assistance with teacher pensions.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, you knew that was coming.
We knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. That's like shifting things, cost to your children. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's nice. You know, we have three children. It'd be nice for me to do all these things for them and make it look like, oh, we adore our father because look what he bought us. Look what he did. And then if you leave and they go, look at the debt he left us. That's not good.
I hear people complain about taxes. People always complain about taxes.
Yes.
And they say, you know, Maryland is too high. The taxes are too high. When you ask people to pinpoint exactly which ones are they talking about, sales tax, income tax, corporate tax.
It varies from place to place, and it varies from organization to organization. If I was at the manufacturers when I spoke there, yes, it is corporate. If I speak on the Eastern Shore, it's sales tax because – you know, it's easy just to go to Delaware. People are not dumb. They can, you know, go 15 minutes and be there and buy something a little bit cheaper.
A little bit cheaper. There's no sales tax.
Yeah, there's no sales tax.
Hard to compete with that.
Yeah, so.
Unless
you
eliminated sales tax,
well,
right?
So, but making it go, there's a certain level when, you know, if it was only at the original, you know, if it was only 4 or 5%, not 6, then your gas, you know, but the gas tax, the tolls. Tolls are very frustrating for a lot of people, especially anybody that has to. Well, I remember your article. I remember your article you wrote about the Hayden Bridge and got all those people getting off the Tidings Bridge to come around.
To try to save money.
Yeah, to try to save some money. So it varies from person to person. When I deal with major businesses, it's not just the corporate income tax. Generally, it comes down to the income tax itself because they're the ones, the person making that decision, the millionaire you're talking about a little earlier, when they're making the decision, they're looking at, where am I going to live? And we had that situation in Harford County where we had a company that was going to move here and guaranteed 250 jobs the first year up to 780 when they finally got done. And then finally, that was when the income tax went up a few years ago, and they said, no, we're going to Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
So they just decided not to locate here. So the top-level people that make that decision may be the rich person, but they're the ones that make the decision. And that undermines the other jobs for everybody else.
So you think we're not doing a good enough job luring new companies here or headquarters or new businesses?
What I start with is it is best to keep the ones here that are here. It would have been better if, you know, Sparrows Point never would have left. So if you do the math and say, oh, look, we created 3,000 new jobs at this point, but we lost 30,000 jobs, that means you lost 27,000 jobs. So I reach out on a regular basis to the businesses in Harford County to see what is it we're doing that's good for you, what's not good, what can we do to help you stay here. Do that first. It's nice to go to Brazil or to India to try to get new jobs here. Let's keep the ones that are here first, and then that will help encourage other people to come here.
David Craig, before we take our first break today, I want to ask you about today's press release from your campaign calling on Governor O'Malley, Lieutenant Governor Brown, to disclose the costs of Maryland's health insurance exchange. And I left off the adjective, which I usually add there, is troubled, fumbled from the start, glitchy, whatever word you want to add to Maryland's health insurance exchange. But anyway, what exactly are you calling for here? We don't know what this costs.
If you read articles, hear news stories, you hear different articles from one $107 million to almost $200 million was spent on this new technology, this new bureaucracy to create the access to this. And then I'm watching the Super Bowl a couple of weeks ago, and I see Blue Cross Blue Shield on there, and they said, oh, you can get on, go onto our online, and you can be a member in 10 minutes. All those, we had...
Excuse me. The advertisement was, you can go to Blue Cross's website?
You can go on and sign on with the Blue Cross Blue Shield in 10 minutes. I saw that last night when I was watching the one on the Beatles, too.
And you're contrasting that with...
We could have let the brokers who already existed, could have shopped it out. Here's the other thing is, and I mentioned this in the long...
Well, let's explain to people. The exchange, people have choices of a number of health insurance companies.
Yes.
You're saying... We didn't even need the exchange?
We didn't need to create a government exchange. We could have said, here's some private ones that are out here. We could have marketed them. Actually, other people probably said, hey, I could create my own exchange, and it would have been much more competitive.
The idea was to help people compare the costs and the policies, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and didn't do a good job.
Okay. Well, it didn't.
But they need to reveal how much they spent, because here's the other thing. I hear that some of these companies that were supposed to create this, there was one article that came out recently that said, when they looked at the procurement, they found out they didn't have any background in doing this. That's not good.
I read that. It was in the Washington Post.
I sit in Harford County. I'm on the Board of Estimates. It's the same as the Board of Public Works. And one of the requirements is if we put out a bid and you were the one bidding on it, you have to prove to us that you could do that kind of work. You may have come in at the lowest level, but we go, no, sorry, that's a fake. Because then you're going to come back and either not do it well, or you're going to come back and ask for a change order to get more money.
What do you think about the administration's response to this fact that this debacle debacle is a kind word for its beginning. It's still chugging along. I guess they're still trying to sign people up through the health insurance exchange. But Lieutenant Governor Brown likely is running for governor as well. Could actually be your opponent once we're past the primary. It's a possibility. What do you think of his response to this?
If you made a mistake, you should admit you made a mistake, but you should also come up with a solution on how you're going to resolve it if you did that. I mean, if Joe Flacco throws an interception, he admits, I didn't do, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to do, because you also have to do that internally to yourself, and you just don't want to push it off. You want to look and say, all right, did I really make a mistake, and what did I do, and did I depend on someone to help me with this, and I had the wrong decision.
Did you support Obamacare healthcare expansion?
What I thought was done incorrectly was that there are so many things that most people agree about when it comes to healthcare. For example, I think most people in this country would agree that accessibility for women who are having a baby or young children, that most people would have said, yes, we agree with that. Or that an insurance company if you had a pre-existing condition and one insurance company says, we're not going to take you. If we'd said, no, everybody's got to do that. For example, let's say you worked for me and then you said, I'm going to go work for someone else. And so you quit and then you lose my insurance and you go there and you found out you had something and they go, can't get insurance. I think that would happen. I think on pharmaceuticals, most people would have wanted some way to make pharmaceuticals less expensive and more accessible to people. So if they had done it as separate pieces of legislation, I think you would have seen a lot of different people on board, and you could have solved this one problem at a time. You go to a doctor, they don't try to solve everything at the same time either. So it would have been better to phase it in and work it that way. Because one of the things I do see is that it's going to be very difficult for some of our community hospitals to continue to do what they do. And that was changes in rules and regulations. And you go on the Eastern Shore, some doctors are making decisions saying, I'm not going to practice here anymore. I'm going to go somewhere else. So,
Have you heard this?
Yes.
Have you heard from the community hospitals about
Obamacare? Community hospitals have talked about, because of the way funding is going to take place, that they will probably have to reduce the size of their employment, which then means you may have... It may be affordable, but now it's not accessible because you might have to sit in the emergency room longer, or the doctor that you might have been able to go see isn't there anymore because they went somewhere else. So healthcare is not just about affordability. It's about quality and accessibility. So you want to make sure you have good doctors and nurses, that it's close by and accessible, and that it doesn't break your wallet when you go do it.
David Craig is the Harford County executive. He's a candidate for governor of Maryland from the Republican side. You're welcome to call with a question for David Craig in this hour of midday. 410-662-8780 is our number. You can also submit a question by email. I've got one already. Others are coming in. midday@wypr.org. Any question at all for the candidate? A short break on midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Candidate interview this hour, David Craig, Harford County Executive, candidate for Governor of Maryland, Republican, 410-662-8780. First question by email has to do with fracking in Maryland, David. That is the process used for extracting natural gas from the earth. It's being done in Pennsylvania, I think already parts of West Virginia. Question is it going to be done in Maryland? I think we're still waiting to hear from a gubernatorial commission recommendations on how and whether it should be done in parts of Western Maryland. What do you think about the fracking front? And should there be fracking in Maryland? Have you made up your mind about that yet?
One of the problems in denying it is if I look at the map, and you look at Garrett County, you can see now all the companies that were going to look at fracking in Maryland have left. They said the study is too long. They don't believe that it's really being done as a study. It's just to delay it. So they've left, and all these people that had pieces of property that have said, you know, we could get a lease on this, they've lost that. But if you look now at what the other companies have done, they went right across the border. But there'll be people on the radio won't be able to see this, but they're coming in a diagonal under Maryland. So they're still coming in. So if we think that we've resolved the environment.
You mean they're actually drilling under Maryland?
Yeah, they're going to be drilling underneath. So it's still going to happen, but we will have no control over it. It would have been better if we had said, yes, it is going to happen here, but we're going to have some control over that. Garrett County is interesting and has a large amount of state-owned property out there. And, you know, there's still many concerns about what has happened. You know, when you see what's happening in different places, you want to make sure your water is good. But I think we could have done a better aspect on it.
So do you think that's a dead issue? So if say you were to be elected, would you open that up again?
I would open that up again, yes.
Okay. How do you feel about wind energy, the experiment that's underway in Maryland to get us wind power coming off the shores of Ocean City?
I don't think most people like the $1.50 per 1,000 kilowatt that they're going to have to pay for and never have access to it. I mean, we looked at wind energy issues in Harford County, and it turned out there wasn't enough wind. I guess we didn't have enough politicians with hot air in their mouth to make the air go around fast enough. So, you know, if we're saying that that's going to work, it's being subsidized. So would it have worked a different way? The other thing I see on all the energy issues, whether you're in favor of natural gas or oil or wind or solar, all the other groups want to fight you on the dollar amount. And when you see the ones that actually have the best amount, their dollars drop for a short while until they win the fight, and then they go back up. And you can go back to Rockefeller when he started the oil furnaces that people had and get them away from wood. He'd give you the furnace because he knew he was going to sell you oil, and the price of oil would go up. So that's what that's what I see happening all the time on the energy issue side.
One other thing, it has to do with the environment, and there may be some other questions on the environmental front for David Craig. I think we talked about this one time when you visited the show when it was proposed, the stormwater fee. That came through the legislature last year.
It was 2012,
and was implemented last year in Baltimore and nine counties, I think it is, or 10 counties.
It was 10 counties altogether.
Yeah, including Harford County.
Yes.
And you've called for the repeal of the stormwater fee that people ridicule as the rain tax.
Yes.
So tell us about that. Why do you oppose it?
I do not like when the state government comes in with any mandate to tell a local government what they have to do. Particularly on raising money. If they had come in with a bill and said, here's what you can do, if you want to create this tax, you can create it. And then the local county executive and county commissioners or county council members vote on it, that's a separate issue. And the analogy I make is that so many things were exempted. I could have put this tax on a private school, but not a public school. So government properties were exempted. And the rules, and it really didn't come in with what the solutions were for environmental issues. It was just, here's a dollar amount you have to raise. And I gave examples to different agencies at the state level. I said, let's say there are two farmers that are side by side, both 100 acres, both have a stream in them. Which one's the biggest polluter? How would you know? He goes, and they said, we can't prove it. So how would I know what to tell one to do and what not one not to do? The other thing is some farmers had a situation where they had to put concrete pads out for manure. Well, now they're going to be taxed because they have an impervious surface. So here we told them to do something, they did it, and now we're going to tax them for it. That's not fair. And I also disagree with some of the issues about, all right, it rains and the water comes off your roof. Well, the water that comes off my roof goes into my yard, so it does go through a pervious surface before it gets anywhere else. But here's the other issue. If anything got washed off the roof, it wasn't me putting it there. It was air pollution. So you're not really looking at the real solution of what the problem, original problem is of the environmental issue.
Well, the idea wasn't to penalize individuals. It was to make have a community effort, a community pool of money, so that you could put it towards stormwater remediation or even eradication in some places where it's needed. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, about what you just said, that if the state had just said to the county councils and the city council in Baltimore, do this if you want to, they would never do that. Your county council would never raise a charge a fee for such a thing.
But if you look at Carroll County had money already in there. We've been spending money on a regular basis on stormwater restoration, on streams. Most of these problems actually occurred in development that took place between the 60s and 80s. In that time period. So we're restoring streams. We've been doing stormwater management issues. So we've been doing it on a regular basis. And actually, if you look at the studies on our streams and rivers, we're pretty good. But Carroll County already felt they had a source of funding for this. Why should they be forced to implement some new fee?
I don't know the answer to that. Is it because the state felt it needed to be stepped up, that this is a serious form of pollution for the bay, and that we haven't been really been paying attention to it?
I believe that they were looking at
adequate attention.
At some of the other counties that said, we don't have the money, so if you tell us we have to do it, it makes it easier for us.
Okay. All right. But if elected, you would bring that up again. You would ask the legislature to consider repealing it.
I would say, let's repeal it and make it that they can do it, the different counties can do it. The other thing is, why 10 counties, you know, all of them? And the other issue I had in pushing a bill in Harford County was we have three municipalities and they were exempt. Now, they won't be exempt in the future, but all municipalities were exempt. Now, eventually, you know, it's kind of the nose of the camel under the tent.
Mm-hmm.
They would change that. But so it was very difficult for some people in, let's say, Joppa or Edgewood to say, why are you exempting Aberdeen or Havertagh? It's like, that's the way the law was written.
Do you think it was unfair just to single out 10 counties in Baltimore? The whole state should have been involved?
Because I believe that
Eastern Shore is involved in this and Western counties.
I believe that the best way is to look at the tributaries themselves, because each watershed tributary is slightly different. If you look at farms in Harford County, if you look at the development in Harford County, it's different for the Bush River than it is for, you know, other rivers. If you look at, but then you have this situation. Let's say that we were resolving every issue in Harford County, and we are separated from Cecil County by the Susquehanna River, but they're exempt. That's like your neighbor is cleaning up. You're cleaning up your swimming pool, but they're throwing stuff in it. So you're not really looking at the whole. So watershed by watershed, because you look at farmers on the Southern Shore with poultry farmers. Look them on Frederick County with dairy farmers. Everything's slightly different. So it'd be better to look at what are the problems in this particular tributary and come up with a solution item by item.
David Craig is our guest, Harford County executive and Republican candidate for governor of Maryland. A question from Kevin in Havertagh Grace that has to do with the environment. Go right ahead, Kevin. You're on with David Craig.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you, there in the past decade during your term, there's been a few environmental concerns in Harford County, including the MTBE leak in Falston, and then as well as a vacant lot in Havertagh Grace. That's been incredibly polluted that has led to them being pretty much vacant ever since those environmental concerns have been unwrapped. But I was just wondering what you were planning on doing to make sure that those didn't transpire statewide.
Well, the first issue you mentioned didn't happen when I was county executive.
What is he referring to, by the way?
The first one
was the one in Falston.
The one in Falston was a gasoline station that had a major leak for a long time. And it polluted the water of the people that were on wells in that area, so they had no private access to getting their own water. And it's been a long lawsuit that's been going on, and that had happened in the early 2000s before I was there. So we've had to deal with the lawsuit, but we didn't have the environmental thing.
Right.
And the one on the city in Havertagh Grace, the piece of property there is not as polluted as most people think. They've been following some of the news, and they just hear certain other politicians talk about that. But purchasing that piece of property allows us to make sure it does get cleaned up. And we've done that in various parcels of property because we've bought over 500 acres of property in the state in Harford County and make sure that it is clean.
What is that property that he's referring to, just for the record?
The second one?
Yeah.
It's called Water Street. It is literally right on the Susquehanna River. If you been in Havre de Grace. It's north of the, bridge.
We'll wrap up on environment here, unless someone else has another question. But how do you rate yourself as a county executive in terms of the environment, and how do you do it? What's your measure of it?
Well, if you look at Harford County, we're number one in the state when it comes to air pollution coming out of cars. In other words, the best. Not number one. We're not the worst. We're the best. When it comes to recycling people's solid waste, we're number two in the state. When it comes to ag preservation, we're number 10 in the nation. So, you know, we have reached out. We've maintained what the state suggested requirements are when it comes to the amount of open space that you have to make sure that you do that. And we have a very good environmental – actually, we have a very good environmental team that is working on stream restorations on these streams that were destroyed in the 70s and rebuilding them. Another big issue that a lot of people forget about has to do with your sewage treatment plants, and we've kept that up. I did that as when I was the mayor of Havre de Grace, people flushed. It still went straight straight in. And by the time I was gone, we were number one in the state.
Well, having a flush tax certainly helped that, didn't it?
Well, that was separate. That was a real flush tax.
It was enacted by the state. You could make a comparison with the stormwater fee. People don't, but I see the similarity there. The flush tax certainly helped local executives pay for upgrades to wastewater treatment plants.
And I did not disagree with the part on the municipalities and people that were on. I think the problem was when they shifted it and said it's going to go on septic, because there was no guarantee of what was going to happen. When they were doing it just on, the municipalities and people that lived on a regular sewage treatment, I think it would have been better to have separated that and kept it differently, because there are many options. And here's a situation in Harford County. We have a development envelope. We have about 80% of the people in Harford County live in it. 3,500 of those homes are on septic systems, and they're within a couple hundred yards of current, waste lines that we could have said, would it have been better for us to have reached out and get these people hooked up rather than to go out and find 30 in the rural areas and get them fixed? It would have been much better to look at that situation, because those are also the older ones that are having problems. The ones that were built in the last 20 years are in pretty good shape. Those ones that were built in the 40s and 50s are the ones that are collapsing. And the fight we had was, all right, if I had to extend it and there was a vacant lot, people would say, well, you're just doing it so somebody can develop the vacant lot. Now, we'd like to get those 30 homes on a regular thing. It would have been better to do it that way.
Let's move on to another topic, education. Art and Laurel, I'll let you ask the question I was going to ask David Craig. Welcome to our show, Art.
Good afternoon. Sir. Where do you stand on Common Core?
Well, as a teacher and assistant principal for 34 years in middle school, I tell people education is about common sense, not about Common Core. It's about what happens between the student in the classroom and the teacher themselves. We do not need politicians to come in and tell teachers how they are going to evaluate students. We don't need politicians to come up with curriculum development. We don't need them to do the student achievement, nor do we need them to do teacher evaluations. That should be the Board of Education and the principal and the people that work and the teachers that work in the school. And now that they finally admitted that the MSA testing is not working, well, that just shows that, I was a teacher when they first came out with that type of testing, and I could tell my principal, look, I can tell you which students are going to pass this test and which aren't. And you have problems. Let's say that Dan's a teacher and he has a student at 75%, he gets them to 80%. That means that student is now considered good. Let's say I had a student at 20% and I get them to 75% and I'm still rated, no, I didn't do a good job. Or let's say you have a student that was over 80%, but then something happens and they drop. If you're a teacher, you can understand why. Maybe their parents got divorced. Maybe someone passed away. Maybe they've had some health problems. And then you can understand why they dropped in the testing. So the testing is not really the best way to assess a school. Plus, the other thing is I would pass out the test that had to be done, and the student would say, is this for my grade? No. Well, I don't care. I don't care if I do well or not.
But I want to understand, at its root, in principle, the Common Core curriculum, do you have a problem with having a sort of national standard for English and math Common Core?
I teachers go to college. They learn how to teach. They learn what to do. And the more they do that, the more it's like, man, we could just put it online and just do it that way. Teachers have different – you have to have the vision of the teacher looking at the students in the class to say, what am I actually going to teach these children? Am I going to make it too hard for them or too easy? Because I could – I could tell you I could be teaching geography about, say, South America, and I would know one class maybe in one day would know it all, and I know another class, it might take a week. And so you have to have that ability to do it. So you can't have someone coming in and saying all these things about the curriculum.
But there's been this push for standardization for so long now, and it looks like this is another step toward that, right? So that we're sort of all, pardon the quote, all on the same page in terms of what students are taught and what they see on tests, right? So this has been around for a while. So would you, what would you do? Have Maryland customize its own education system uniquely from the other states?
Well, you know, you go around and it's usually pretty similar from one state to another. If you go to, you know, or one county to another, that, you know, maybe a student is going to, if they're in middle school and it's 6th, 7th, and 8th, and maybe they're going to do physical science in 6th grade and more of a biological in 7th, and at another school it might just be the opposite. What's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
When they get out, they're still learning the same things, you know, or if they're in 7th grade and they're doing U.S.
Well,
history.
Why the push to Common Core then? I mean, why have 45 states, I think that's the last count I saw, signed up for it?
Yeah, a lot of them are backing, a lot of them are thinking they should back off by this point. I don't believe the federal government's main, our founders wanted the federal government to be in charge of the safety and security of our country. It wasn't supposed to be in charge of education.
David Craig is our guest in this hour of Midday, Harford County Executive, Republican candidate for governor in the June primary, 410-662-8780. If you have a question for David Craig. A short break on Midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. There was a Second Amendment gun rally last week in Annapolis, and some people were walking around with buttons that read, David Craig supports concealed carry. Is that true? I assume from that means David Craig, my guest in this hour
yes.
of Midday, supports concealed carry permits for Marylanders.
I think that the Second Amendment, if you look at our founders, I mean, obviously they came in and said, you know, freedom of speech, religion, those things were number one. But they also realized number two was people need to be able to defend themselves. And I believe that people should have the right as long as and the person when they if they use a weapon, you know, there are a lot of stabbings going on right now. Or we're going to have law control, you know, knife control, things like that. That's not good. But when people do commit a crime using a gun, I believe they should be punished. But the average person, you look back at, you know, a long time ago and all the guns that people had. When I was a member of the House of Delegates, I saw what did happen when gun control legislation came in. Gun sales went up. When no gun control legislation went in, gun sales went down. So if your real concern was you don't want more and more people buying guns, putting legislation is, I went to a store to buy something else. It was a pawn shop. I was trying to buy a coin because I have a nephew named Cash, and I buy him a coin every year for his birthday. But they also sold guns there. And the guy said they had sold every gun because everybody was so worried about what was happening because of the gun control legislation. So, you know, and I talked to people that had never bought a gun before that wanted to go out and buy them. So, you know,
Are you talking about the aftermath of the laws that were passed this past year in the General Assembly in 2013?
Yes.
Right, because the rush to buy certain weapons that were going to be
I'll give you another example.
But as time goes by, though, you know, those weapons aren't available anymore in Maryland. We had the shooting in Columbia Mall, and it was pointed out that the purchase of the gun, you know, was made in December. Had it been under the previous law or lack of law, that far more people might have been killed had that person decided to seek a weapon with greater firepower.
I was actually at a facility a couple weeks ago where here's where that doesn't work either. When you say a particular weapon, they had taken these particular weapons and they had taken certain parts of them off and replaced them with different parts, and it's no longer the same weapon. So
you're saying there's nothing we can do?
Really, there.
It sounds like you're saying there's nothing you can do about controlling weapons.
They took the barrels off, and they had replaced them with a different kind of barrel. It's like now it's not the same weapon. So,
do you support concealed carry?
I think people. You, I don't. I.
You
I,
think anyone I don't, should be able to carry a gun with a?
They should be able to apply for it and be able to get one.
And that would make all of us safer. Why do you say that?
Well, if you walked out to your car at night and someone came up and thought, well, you might have a gun, they might not come up and try to assault you.
Okay.
You know, if they really didn't know. I mean, they had that situation. Remember in Florida, probably about 15 years ago, when people had rental cars and they had a rental driver's license on it, and they knew they could own a gun, but they knew if they were renting a car for a vacation that they probably didn't have a gun, and so they were going after those types of people. So they finally changed the law and said, we're going to change it and have a nondescript license plate on here, because that's what people are criminals are. Here's the other thing. In Harford County, it's unfortunate. I think in my time as county executive, we've had about 33 murders, I think it is. And half were done with guns and half were done with other things. But the ones that were done with guns, most of them were already done with guns that were illegally obtained. They were either stolen, you know, things like that. And usually the ones that were not done with stolen, it was either an accidental or it was one of those murder-suicides, which you're not going to be able to prevent one way or another. So it's not just about gun control. I think the real thing about public safety is having a good police department, a good person in charge of your police department, having good state's attorneys that can actually do prosecution, have a good correctional facility. I think one of our weaknesses is we're not doing enough on trying that when someone's in prison to help them when they get out to actually change their life. We have too much recidivism. You know, probably 78% of the people are going back to prison eventually, and we need to work with it. Because
enough corrections and corrections?
No, I don't think so. Because, you know, if someone's getting out, usually they don't even know until the day they're getting out. Well, they should know. We should have a program where 30 days before you get out, all right, here's what's going to happen. Here's where you're going to live, what kind of job you're going to have. Maybe we have some you know, employment policies where if someone gets hired and they have this background that they could be, you know, looked at on a regular basis, but you just can't hire them just because they broke the law.
Back to the phone lines for our guest, David Craig, Harford County Executive and candidate for governor. Rich in Forest Hill in Harford County, thanks for calling.
Yes, hey, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question relating to education. I'd like to, County Executive, to respond to why teachers in Harford County haven't had a raise in probably 5 years, and why they rank so low amongst all the subdivisions, maybe barely above some of the poor, quote-unquote, Eastern Shore counties?
All right. Well, actually, they did get a pay raise 2 years ago. Everybody got a pay raise in Harford County 2 years ago. They sort of forgot about that. And I can look back to 2007 and 2008 when I was the county executive and actually gave teachers a 28% pay increase those 2 years, 14% 1 year and 14% the next year. The economy went bad. Our property tax revenues that came in went from going up 35% every year to going down 15%. So we lost a tremendous amount of income like that. Changes in rules and regulations on how I have to fund OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits, have cost me $92 million. The teacher pension shift has cost Harford County $21 million. These are all funds that could have gone to not just teachers, but even county employees that do public safety, you name it, it could have gone there. But because of all these changes in rules and regulations and the fact the economy had gone so bad, and we are still at the level right now where property tax is still flat. So in other words, you know, we're not getting, and that's the biggest source of revenue for Harford County and other counties. Now, I have looked at how people look at the numbers and go, we're at this level compared to other levels, and I see the differences might be slight. Someone be making less than, say, someone in Cecil County at the same year, but it's only $100 difference. And if you go to work in Montgomery County and you live there, you're going to be paying higher taxes. You're going to be paying more for the house. You know, it varies from place to place. It is very frustrating, not just for teachers, but for everybody else who works in the school system, but for everybody else who works with me in county government, that it's been a very difficult 5 years. It hasn't been fun.
You know, how does Harford County fare in terms of aid from the state compared to the other counties?
That is probably the other biggest loss, because last year we actually got less money from the state. They took $4 million from our board. So when the board says, you know, then they come to me and ask for money, and I didn't take money. I always did maintenance of effort. I always gave them more money than the year before. So we always did that. And the teacher pension shift was $10 million. That's $10 million I could have put in their account. Mm-hmm. That would have funded. They need about 11 to do about a 4% pay
increase. Does it compare with other counties?
We get hurt worse. We got hurt worse.
Now, why is that?
Because
the state formula thinks it's a more affluent county than other counties?
Yes, they rate us as a more affluent county. But the analogy I make on that is, let's say there were five of us sitting at this table, and you were the richest one, and I was second, and somebody a third, fourth, and fifth, and you retire and I quit and someone else passes away and the guy that was number five is now number two, but he still makes the same amount of money. You're not richer. So it's not that we got richer. It's that we just didn't go down. And this year alone, Harford County will only get from the state about $900,000 more than last year. Prince George's County will get $46 million.
For education.
For education.
About, yeah.
And Prince George's will get $46 million. They're three times bigger than us. That's a 50 times difference. So, you know, that's not good for that because there are poor, you know, if you look at areas and say this area is poor, well, we have areas like that in Harford County and other rich counties have areas like that that you want to make sure you sustain. Now, it also comes down
to... What do you think of this? As you're describing this, I'm wondering, as governor, would you change any of that? How would you change the formula for distribution of educational funds? What did you base it on?
Well, I don't think we need to base it on the geography and things like that. That it just goes to the county. It should, you should make sure it goes to a particular school if there's a particular area like that. But also, look, who spends the most money on education in the state of Maryland?
Baltimore City.
Yeah. Is it the best? So is it just about the money? No. And there also are ways that we could save money that could be better. For example, I have a facilities department. The board has a facilities department. I have a law department. They have law. I have, you know, human resources. They have it. I have capital projects. They have capital projects. None of this is in the classroom. So all these things, and I do it for the library.
It's duplication, you're saying.
Yeah, it's duplication. Yeah. I do that for the library system. I do it for the sheriff's office. I do it for all these other agencies. We could do it for them and say, look, any savings, we're not going to take the money from you. It will stay in education. It will stay in the classroom. That's where it should go. And it could be done differently.
We're headed toward the end of our hour here, David Craig. So I want to ask you this question that came in from one of our listeners, Richard. If County Executive Craig were to summarize his defining campaign message or his brand in a single sentence compared to the other candidates running, what would it be? So he wants me to hold you to a single sentence. I mean, the time remaining, you can take longer than that.
I can have two sentences.
Yeah, so. No, you can take a little bit more time here. You talked about manufacturing and jobs at the very beginning here, but yeah, I guess I'd wonder what is the theme. And when I ask you that question, what would separate you from the pack? What would separate you certainly from your, if you were elected, your successor, Martin O'Malley? And what makes you a Republican? What would be the difference for our listeners?
Well, I do tell people I'm a Marylander. Let's not worry about the state parties. I'm a 10th generation Marylander. I want to stay here. I want our children to stay here, our grandchildren, the 12th generation to stay here. The one thing I do tell people is governor's not an entry-level position. You know, you just don't start there. And there are many people that are running that have never done that before because, you know, I started as a mayor, and I learned a lot about balancing budgets and how you appoint your staff people and how you work and how the target's always on your back, no matter what. It also gets on your wife's back. All right. And then when I became county executive, I could see the problems were very similar. Solutions were, you know, much the same way. It was 10 times bigger. And, you move the decimal point over for your budget. But you still have similar types of things. And then governor's the same way. And I don't, I don't think it's just an entry level. You know, you're not going to draft somebody to be your quarterback on your Super Bowl team, hopefully, just by picking somebody that never played before. So that's one aspect. You have to have that. And when it comes to what I would do, it's I believe government should take as little money out of your pocket as possible, spend it as efficiently as possible, and still provide the services that people truly need.
Can that be done?
It can be done. It can be done.
That means cutting some of the services we do provide in Maryland.
It means
cutting, possibly raising tuition at universities, that kind of stuff.
Well, you want to go to the tuition issue. I believe that when there's a student that starts school, when you're a freshman, your tuition should be the same all 4 years. If you graduate in 4 years, it's a contract. When you come out, you still pay the same thing. Now, if you go 5 years, fifth year, your tuition went up.
You're on your own?
Yes, you're on your own.
Okay. All right, so that was more than one sentence.
Sorry,
I don't know.
Yes. Well, that's a paragraph.
You have plenty of time to work on and debate style when they ask you in one sentence to summarize your campaign. So David Craig, Harford County Executive, been our guest in this hour at midday and is a candidate for governor on the Republican side. So thank you very much here today.
Pleasure.
Thank you, folks. And that's the first hour of midday for this Monday in February. We're going to take a break here now for lunch, and then the second hour of our show will be all about the Beatles, and we'll completely different, as they say, as we move on to talk about some music history in the second hour of our show today. Lunch provided by Atwaters on Monday. Atwaters supports local radio, local farmers, and local appetites. Located at Belvedere Square, the shops at Kenilworth, Bear Hills, or Main Street, Catonsville, Visit atwaters.biz for more information. We have the news coming up from NPR. Please stay tuned for that and then the second hour of Midday.